All right, so we're picking up now in the generations of Terra, or the Toledo of Terra, and this section primarily focuses on Abraham. That's what we're going to see, one of the main patriarchs of the nation of Israel, and really kind of the theme of this section, and we're going to see over these 14, 15 chapters or so, is through the life of Abraham, we're going to see that the Lord is building a nation. Okay, that's kind of the one of the main things, building a nation, and then laying the foundation for this nation to make an international impact. Okay, so it's God is building his nation, and then he is laying the foundation for this nation to make an international impact. And this foundation that I'm talking about, this foundation for this nation, is really primarily focused on two important items, okay? And that is the Abrahamic covenant. So we're going to see another covenant come about, like we saw a covenant with Noah. We're going to see a covenant with Abraham. So the Abrahamic covenant, and then the topic of faith as well, okay? The topic of faith. And so what we're going to have, like in this section of Genesis, we will see God make promises to Abraham that are part of this covenant. Okay, he's making promises to Abraham that are part of this Abrahamic covenant. And then we're going to also see an emphasis on Abraham needing to have faith in the Lord and believe those promises. Okay, that's really kind of this theme. And that's really going to be central to not only this section of Scripture, it is going to be central to Israel as a nation, right? That they will be one that's centered on faith. Okay, they need to trust God and his promises. And you can see the connection even in the New Testament, right? That's still us, right? Where we are called to have faith and trust in God's promises, right? That's still foundational to everything, okay? All right, so let's get into this. I don't know if we'll finish Abraham, but we'll try. All right, so first, chapter 11 ends with kind of Terah's descendants. So again, that's where we get kind of this mentioning of Abraham, okay? Abram at this point. And notice, let's see, in verse 31, where they are, or even in verse 28, say they are in the land of Ur of the Chaldeans. Do you guys know another name for like the Chaldeans? What nation was that? Not Assyria. Yeah, Babylon. Okay, so Babylon. And where did we just see Babylon? Tower of Babel, yeah. And so essentially, right, Abram's from like kind of enemy territory, right? Like he's being called out of Babylon at this moment, okay? And then you can also understand, again, just little tidbits here, making connections in the future. Israel in their future, when they're taken to exile, the southern kingdom especially, where do they go? Who takes them into exile, do you guys remember? Huh? Yeah, who takes like the southern kingdom into exile later on in the Old Testament? Huh? Yeah, Babylon, all right? And so, I'm not like too crazy, it's the same. I'm not gonna throw some random name out there. Like, yeah, it's Babylon, there's a theme, it's a connection. Yeah, and so what's the point, right? Like, it's where you have Abraham being called out of Babylon, and then in the future, what? Israel taken back into exile in Babylon and being called out of that again. Again, it's kind of this, okay, we're starting over, right? It's kind of this reset once again, right, with this nation is what's going on there as well. Okay, just a little tidbit. And then also one other thing to point out in this section, verse 30, Abram's wife Sarai was barren. She had no child, okay? And that's going to come into play here in the coming chapters, okay? But that's side note. All right, so that takes us into the first three verses of chapter 12, and we see God's promises to Abram. And so these promises will be kind of what eventually are part of this Abrahamic covenant that God will make with Abram. But for now, we have these promises. And so, but first, like we see this call that God calls him to what? Go from your country. It says, go from your country, your kindred, and your father's house to the land that I will show you. Okay, so this call for Abram to leave essentially everything, right? Notice the going from the general to the specific, like your country, then your kindred, and your father's house. Like, so leave everything and go. to the land that I will show you. So notice even that, where does God tell him where he's going to go? No, just tells him like, yeah, I'll show you where to go. Just start going. And so right away you see an element of what? A necessity of faith, of trusting God. And what did I say? Remember, the foundational, one of the elements of the foundation that's being laid here for the nation of Israel is what? Faith. So see that right at the beginning where Abram until he gets his name actually changed, but I might slip up. So Abram, element of faith right off the bat. Okay, go leave your country, go place I'll show you. But then notice these promises that God makes to him, starting in verse 2. And I will make you a great nation. So that's the first promise there, is he will make him a great nation. And what do you need to be a nation, essentially? Yeah, you need people and what? And land, right? You need land and people, essentially, is to be a nation, all right? And so kind of incorporated in that promise of a nation is this promise of land and offspring as well, okay? So you need land and people. And so, again, we see he's going to a land, so that's helpful for the land part of it. But then if you remember, what, Abram's wife is barren, so she has no children. They have no children yet. And so that's going to be, some we're going to have to see how that unfolds, okay? Because you need children to have an offspring, right? Like, and have a nation. Okay, so that's the first promise. Second, notice he says, and I will bless you. Okay, I will bless you. Where have we seen blessing before? In Genesis, true. Yeah, we saw that just with Noah, right? In the Noahic covenant, that this idea of blessing, which then that also linked back to creation, right? Adam and Eve. And so what's happening here is what? Abraham and his covenant, these promises that are going with him, are being linked to all of it, right? To where it's being linked to the Noahic covenant, it's being linked to creation and the blessing there. And so again, we see God is continuing to move his plan forward, right? This is being picked up here to move this plan forward, okay? That it's going to be through Abram and his line that these promises will continue, that God's plan will continue, okay? So again, this is like that narrowing effect of Genesis, okay? The narrowing effect. And we see that kind of confirmed, right? Like at the end of verse 2, that so that you will be a blessing, okay? So you'll be a blessing to other people. And then verse 3, and I will bless those who bless you, and who dishonors you, I will curse. But then notice at the end, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So again, it's through Abram and his line that this blessing is going to take place, okay? So again, we see this narrowing down, okay? So the second promise was to bless. Third is to what? He will make your name great. Where do we just see this idea of the names going on? Yeah, Tower of Babel, right? They were saying, like, we're going to make our own name. But what's God say here? Like, but they don't get a name, but you do, right? I'm going to make your name great and everything, okay? So we see that. Fourth, again, tied in with the blessing. We see that those who bless Abram, God will bless, and those who curse him, God will curse. And we'll see that unfold even through Genesis as well. Okay? And so we have all these promises that are part of what will eventually become the Abrahamic covenant. Okay? But there's these promises made to Abram here. And really, you can summarize kind of the three main ideas of what's going on encapsulated in the promise of Abraham is land, seed, and blessing. Okay, land, seed, and blessing, right? They will have a land, you'll have offspring that will culminate in the offspring eventually, right? The Messiah, and then blessing, right? Those are kind of like the three main parts of these promises and what will eventually become this covenant. Okay, and these are going to be significant not only for the life of Abram, but also the nation of Israel as a whole, okay, later in the Old Testament. Again, these are all foundational to the nation as a whole. Okay? We tracking? Good? All right. And so then the next kind of chunk of verses here, Abraham, obeys, right? He obeys, he goes, right? Goes as the Lord commanded him. Says he was 75 years old when he departed Haran, okay? So he's 75 and he's going. And then notice like verse 7 talks about the Lord appeared to Abram and he says, to your offspring, I will give this land. So he arrives in the land of Canaan. God promises him like, hey, this is your land, right? Like I'm going to give this land to you and to your offspring and all that. And Abraham even like builds an altar there, worships because of that. Like he believes that promise that God will do this. And verse 9 there ends with him settling in the Negev, all right? If you remember back in our first thing with the geography, that's like in the very southern part of Israel, all right? Kind of more deserty kind of a place, okay? But then, what's kind of interesting in light of all that, the next kind of 10 verses or so here, we see a famine hits the land, and then Abram goes down to Egypt, okay? And why would that be interesting based on what just happened in the previous section we just talked about, of him going down to Egypt? I guess think that'd be kind of weird. Oh, that's true. That's part of it. But even just like in the media, what we just said, what did God promise Abram in that last section? Like, yeah, like I'm giving you this land and your offspring. And Abram like worships and like, yeah, I believe it. And then what do we have next? Like, I'm going to leave the land, right? Like, is that what you would expect him to do? No, you'd do what? You'd stay, right? You'd stay in the land, right? Like God has promised you this land. And this is an element, again, of trusting who? God, right? And this is the very, in this case, a more like human response, right? Of how do I fix this? Like, oh, there's a famine now. I'm just going to leave, right? When God instead was like, hey, this was your land, okay? And so what you're going to have, remember I mentioned there's like the land, seed, and blessing. Through the life of Abram, you're going to see him tested on especially those areas of land and offspring, okay? And so this is the first kind of test of that faith is, are you going to believe and stay in the land, right? Like, I've promised you this land. Will you stay here and believe that? And what does he do? He leaves, right? He goes down to Egypt. And we'll see in a moment, a little bit later too, of kind of some consequences of that to show that this wasn't probably the best idea, right? What we see here, first off, okay, so he comes down to Egypt, and maybe you guys have heard the story, right, as he comes down, tells his wife Sarai to say, like, you're my sister, right, so that, like, Pharaoh doesn't take you and kill me, kind of that whole thing, but of significance here, Pharaoh kind of takes her as his wife, like, as part of the harem, right, kind of a thing. But then what ends up happening to Pharaoh and his household? They get what? Kind of like cursed and stuff, right? And so what do you have unfolding here? What did God promise at the beginning of chapter 12, right? Those who bless you, I will bless. Those who curse, I will curse. And you see that unfolding here in this section, right? Pharaoh, even unknowingly, kind of like in a sense, curse Abram by taking his wife. And so God curses, okay? And then we see Abram leaves in this, and he's starting to accumulate some wealth even in the midst of this. And you see God being gracious to Abram, even in the midst of his lack of faith. All right, so there's a little bit of struggle there. So even though Abram initially believes, he still struggles with actually fully believing the promises of God. Okay, that's really what's going on here. But then notice chapter 13. He heads back up from Egypt, him and his wife and Lot, who kind of is with him. You guys remember who Lot is? What relation? Nephew. All right. His nephew of Abraham or Abram. I keep doing that. Sorry. But we have them kind of come back up into the land of Canaan. And we see, again, an element of God making Abram into a great nation, right? He's starting to build and accumulate things to where it gets to the point that between Abram and Lot, they have just too many people that they just need to split up. All right, that's kind of what ends up happening. They need to split up. And so Lot, like Abram gives Lot the choice of, hey, where do you want to go? And Lot kind of looks out and sees the Jordan Valley, which if you remember our diagram, probably should have some pictures, kind of the eastern side of Israel where the Jordan River was, kind of that valley. And he sees the area and he says, hey, that looks great. I want that area. And he goes and settles there and ends up settling in the land of Sodom. All right, which we'll see them later on. All right, so the land of Sodom. Okay. But then Abram then settles kind of in the mainland of Canaan, okay? Kind of stays in the land, okay? So again, he's kind of learning here, okay? He's learning. He's staying in the land just as he was supposed to, okay? And so starting to really believe this, okay? Believe the promises that God is giving. But then we have in chapter 14, kind of an interesting event takes place where you have these kind of two coalitions of kings get into this war, this battle. And in the process, one of the kings involved is the king of Sodom, which that's where Lot was, right? And as they kind of have this battle, the coalition that the king of Sodom was part of loses. And so this other coalition takes kind of all this stuff, and in the process takes Lot as well, all right? Takes Lot as well and all that, which that's Abram's nephew, remember? And we see someone comes, a messenger comes and tells Abram, like, hey, these people just took your nephew. Like, what are we going to do? And so Abram does what? He goes and rescues him, right? And it says that he takes with him 318 men with him. So again, starting to see the nation that is building from him, right? That he is has enough to recruit 300 people, like 300 young men to come fight, okay? And kind of do this little rescue mission. And we should point out, right, with all this is, okay, we have some idea, like some things to point out here. One, like he is accumulating things, becoming a nation, all that. But then two, why do you think Abram is so like bent on rescuing Lot? Is it solely just because he's family? Do you guys think? He's just family? Could be, right? But a potential thing of what's going on here is, remember, Abram doesn't have what right now? Kids. And so one of his closest relatives that could potentially be one of his heirs would be who? Lot, right? And so Lot's kind of his plan B, right? Where it's kind of like, well, if God doesn't actually kind of follow through, he's still got Lot, right? He's still some family. And we see he kind of has a couple plan Bs, right? Chapter 15, he mentions Eliezer, one of his servants, as being potentially one of his heirs as well. But it seems here the emphasis of why he's so bent on like, I got to go rescue him is because what? That's like my plan B, right? He's my closest relative, my bloodline that I could pass on my stuff to. If God doesn't follow through, I still got Lot, right? My nephew, that's good. That's pretty good, right? And so again, we see this kind of being tested in this area of not only the land, but also the what? The seed, the offspring. And so we're going to see that again unfold as well, where this will have to be kind of dealt with. All right? So keep that in your mind. But then the last half of chapter 14, we have this kind of interesting interaction with this guy who comes on the scene named Melchizedek. All right? Which means like the king of righteousness is kind of that king. And he comes and kind of blesses Abraham and all that. And do you guys remember not only being a king, this King Melchizedek, do you remember what else he was? Yeah, a priest. He was also a priest, it says. And so what you kind of have here in this Melchizedek situation is you have this kind of prototypical king. And we'll see this later in the Old Testament, as well as like the book of Hebrews even picks up on this in Hebrews chapter 7. And the text doesn't give us a whole lot of information about Melchizedek here. But we know he's a priest and he's a king. And so you have the beginnings of this idea of a royal priest, right? Someone who could be both king and priest. And like I said, that's going to be picked up later on in the Old Testament. Like, for example, Psalm 110 verse 4 talks about when David is speaking about the coming Messiah, he says what? You will be a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek, right? He picks up on this idea of this Messiah is going to be both king and priest, okay? And so Melchizedek essentially becomes that kind of paradigm for that. And there's, real quick, like some people have some speculation of who this is and think maybe like, oh, maybe this is like the pre-incarnate Christ. But I would suggest it's probably not him, okay? Based on like some of those other passages, like the Psalm 110 I just mentioned, where it seems weird if it was Christ to say Christ will be in the order of Christ, right? That's kind of a weird thing, right? Like, but rather the Messiah is going to be part of the priesthood of Melchizedek, and so it's a different individual, most likely, would be what I would argue. But again, it's this paradigm of a priest-king, okay, is kind of the idea. All right. And then chapter 14 ends with Abram has also an interaction not only with Melchizedek, but also with the king of Sodom, who offers to kind of give him a bunch of stuff. And if you remember, Abram refuses. Okay, he says, I don't want any of it. And the reason why he says is because he doesn't want to say like, that the guy said he made Abram rich, right? That the king of Sodom couldn't claim that the reason why Abram has all this success is because he gave him stuff, but rather he's trusting who? God, right? God is the one who will provide all this stuff. And so again, we see Abram is learning. He's growing. He's trusting in the Lord, okay? All right, chapter 15. This is where what we mentioned before, where we have God actually make the covenant with Abram. Okay, we mentioned before, chapter 12, we had some of those promises that were given that will be part of this covenant, and now we have this covenant actually taking place. Okay, so the word of the Lord comes to Abram, but then Abram kind of responds, essentially verse 3, where, behold, you have given me no offspring, and a member of my household will be my heir. Okay, and so, again, like, essentially bringing up, God, like, I know all these promises you're making, but, like, I still have a kid, right? Like, you're talking about all these, like, descendants and all this stuff of being a great nation, all these things. I still don't even have one kid, right? Like, how is this going to work out? How is this going to happen, okay? But then notice verse 4, God responds, that like that servant he mentioned, like, shall not be your heir, but rather your very own son shall be your heir. Okay, so he makes it clear it will be your actual son, right? He will be your heir. You will have a son. And then your descendants will follow, right? There'll be a number of descendants. And verse 6, very important verse, right? And he believed the Lord and he counted to him as righteousness. Okay. This element of, again, faith, that Abram believed God's promise of an offspring, which included a child of his own, but also included the promise of a multitude of offspring, which ties in with, again, the Abrahamic covenant and the promise of, like, in the nation, like, you'll be blessed through these things, which links back to, again, the line of the seed, that ultimate offspring, okay? And so this idea that Abraham believed that. He believed all that promise. He believed what God would do, and therefore God counted to him as righteousness, right? He was justified in that way. And that's why you have, like, later on, like in Romans, Paul uses this verse as an example of evidence of justification by faith, okay? To show that justification being declared righteous before God was never a result of works. And Abraham was an example of that. And we see that here, right? And Paul's point, right, is we're all justified in the same way, by faith. Faith in who? Christ, the Messiah. And whereas for us, we look back and we see the work of Christ and we know specifically it's Jesus. Abraham was looking forward, right? Believing this promise of there will be a seed to come, all right? There will be an offspring who will accomplish what we've seen, like Genesis 3:15, crush the head of the serpent, all that stuff. And so it's all saved by faith, all right? Justified by faith, okay? But then you have here, before we get into that, as he talks about his offspring and everything, he also tells him in verse 13 that his offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs and will be servants there, and they will be afflicted for 400 years. All right, you guys remember what that is reference to? Israel's time where? In Egypt. So we'll be coming that to that. But notice the reasoning for that, right? As they're there, it says too, a little bit later, verse 16, and they shall come back here in the fourth generation, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. All right. So essentially what we have here is leading up to the conquest, right? When Israel eventually takes the land. Okay, God is declaring like there'll be a time before that they will be away in a foreign land until it says like the iniquity of the Amorites is complete. And I think people, when we read about the conquest and Israel coming in and taking over, people can kind of have the thought of like, well, that doesn't seem fair, that doesn't seem right. But notice from this passage that how long did God give these people to repent and change? 400 years, right? Even longer probably, because this is later on, right? But like there's 400 years and yet they don't. And he waits till their wickedness is at the point of deserving of that judgment, right? And so that's kind of this context of leading into the conquest as well, okay? All right. But then we see the actual covenant ceremony, if you want to call that, taking place here. All right, where the Lord, they bring some animals, they cut them in half and spread them apart. And you're kind of like, well, that's weird. Like, what are they doing? In the ancient Near East, that culture, when they did covenants, that was kind of this common practice where you would take some animals, split them in half, and then the two parties making the covenant would walk between the animals, essentially symbolizing, like, if I break this covenant, let me be as one of these animals, right? Like, that I would be killed essentially, right? Like, just like one of these animals is kind of the picture there. So that's what's going on with those animals. And so at the end of chapter 15, we see this take place, but notice, is it even before that? Oh, verse 12. It says, as the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell on Abram. Right, and so he kind of falls asleep during this, not out of boredom. This was intentional, right? God to do this. But notice in verse 17, it says, when the sun had gone down and it was dark, behold, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch passed between these pieces, like between the animals. And on that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your offspring I give this land, and all that. Okay, and so what's going on there? The fire pod, the flaming torch seem to be representative of God, okay? And so who do you have passing through the animals? Just God, right? What's Abraham doing? He's sleeping, right? He's still passed out over there, all right? But God is the one walking through, or not walking, like, I don't know, this imagery, right, of him passing through these animals. And what's the point of that? Who is the whole covenant now bearing the full responsibility of that covenant? God, right? Is Abraham bearing any responsibility? No, all right? And so this is what we call like a unilateral covenant, where it's all on him, right? It's all on God. God is essentially saying like, I will be faithful to fulfill all this, right? It doesn't really matter like what Abraham does, all that. I will be faithful to fulfill it. It's all on me, okay? And if you remember, Abrahamic covenant connected to what? The Noahic covenant, which also connects us back to creation. And so again, God is saying, I will do all of it. I will be faithful to fulfill all of it. Okay? All right. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. God's sovereignty in that, for sure. All right. And then you have chapter 16, Hagar and the birth of Ishmael. So again, we still have this reality that Abram and Sarai, they don't have a son still. So again, you have all these promises, but they still don't have a son. And then the question still is, are you going to trust the Lord? Are you going to have faith to trust his promise? Or are you going to kind of take matters into your own hands? Kind of like what happened with the land at the first time, right? And what do we have here? They kind of take matters in their own hands, right? That's kind of what they do. And they do this by Sarai telling Abram to go into the servant Hagar, essentially almost kind of like a surrogate mother type of situation where it's like, hey, she'll produce an offspring for you. Therefore, it'll all work out. But again, this is, again, not trusting the Lord in his promise. And I think we can be very quick to like jump on like their lack of faith. But if you notice here, verse 3, this is taking place after they have lived in the land for 10 years. So that's long, right? Can you imagine that? If you're still waiting on these promises and then 10 years later, it's like, still don't have a kid, right? Like you still don't have an offspring. Like year by year goes by, still don't have anyone. That can be pretty tempting, right? To find another solution, all right? So, but again, even though it's still lack of faith, we can show some grace in that as well, all right? But so they do this plan, but again, this was not the Lord's plan. And so this doesn't turn out well, okay? Let's see. Yeah. All right. And so eventually you have the birth of Ishmael, right? That's the son of Hagar and Abram and all that. And what you'll see, oh, another thing to point out, Hagar, who's she described as? Hagar the what? Did you catch that like in verse 3? The Egyptian, right? The Egyptian, all right? Hagar the Egyptian. Where would they have received, probably gotten her? Egypt, right? When did they go down to Egypt? Yeah, during the famine when he wasn't trusting the Lord in that plan, right? And so that's confirming that that probably wasn't a wise choice. And you see the consequences coming back from that. And you'll see even these consequences coming here, right? Because you have Ishmael's born, and he'll have descendants that are often the enemies of Israel, right? They will often be the enemies of Israel as well. And so again, consequences for those actions, the lack of faith, okay? All right. And let's see if we can get through another thing real quick. Let's get through chapter 17 here. Chapter 17, we have the sign of the Abrahamic covenant, like circumcision, we see here. Notice chapter 17 starts in verse 1 that Abraham was 99 years old at this point. If you look at the end of chapter 16, how old was Abram? Very last verse. 86. So we have a 13-year gap in between chapter 16 and 17. All right? Where, again, still no offspring during that time. Another 13 years. It almost seems like the silence from the Lord, right? And some people speculate that could be a judgment on what they just did in chapter 16, right? But we're not sure of that. But anyways, but it's been 13 years, all right? Still waiting, all right? But in this chapter, we have God emphasizing his promises again, reiterating them, talking about an offspring, talking about a seed to come. But then in this time, there's a little more emphasis also on like some of his seed will be royalty, right? There will be kings who will come from him as well, okay? And then he gives kind of a few different signs to confirm all these promises. And so the first one is he changes Abram's name to Abraham. And so now I can actually stop slipping up and I could just say Abraham. All right, so Abram is now Abraham, which Abraham means the father of a multitude. Okay, so again, God emphasizing that this is in fact going to take place. Second, he gives the sign of the covenant, which is circumcision. Okay, and that's to show that this nation is set apart for God. And then third, he also changes Sarai's name to Sarah, which means princess, and again points to this emphasis on royalty for their descendants as well. Okay? And then we have the Lord promise again that Abraham will in fact have a son through Sarah, and the son will be named Isaac. Okay? And we see when God finished talking, Abraham responds in obedience by performing the sign of the covenant, circumcision. Okay? For him and his household. And that's how chapter 17 ends up. All right? I think that might be where we need to cut it off for now. Let's see. All right. So cut it there for now. Pick back up. Didn't quite get through Abraham, but made some headway.